It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 105 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. This week I've got a great interview with Michael Jan Friedman, a well-known comics writer who's written a lot of successful characters and done a lot of great work. He's now moving into what I call authorship, and he's creating prose novels. His next prose novel has to do with a superhero. So all this kind of ties into comics, and hey, I like variety in my reading as well, so a prose book isn't a problem. We discuss several things having to do with comics, including the trend for digital comics and reboots, but we mainly focus on his book called I Am the Salamander, and you're going to enjoy what you hear about. He's got a Kickstarter project going, and he tells us all how to be involved, and I include myself in that because I want to be sure this project gets made. Then I follow up with the news and previews, and since there's so much to get to, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Michael Jan Friedman, comics creator and also a novelist and author of great things at crazy8press.com. And it's good to talk with you, Michael. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, Wayne. Thank you.
It's good to talk with you because you've got a big project coming that people should know about. So do you want to go ahead and fill us in on what it's about?
Sure. It's called I Am the Salamander, and it's a new superhero novel that I'm working on. It's an original concept, as compared to the 10 or so superhero novels that I've done in the past, which were Silver Surfer and X-Men and Lois and Clark and Animated Justice League. And this is different. You know, it's an original idea. And it's about a kid. It's different. And I'm taking a kind of a risk here with this one because it's about a kid who is a cancer survivor. And, you know, to my knowledge, that's a rare thing in comics and particularly in novels about superheroes, which this kid is. He takes on salamander-like powers, but He's not prepared for them. I mean, who is? But he's particularly not prepared for them because he's just survived cancer. And you know, I had to think long and hard about this. It's not as if I set out to devise a protagonist that had survived cancer. Believe me, it was actually the furthest thing from my mind when I started out, but as I did my research and I learned more about salamanders and what they could do, it became obvious to me that this is the way it had to be.
Okay. It's kind of interesting. When I was growing up, there were salamanders up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I always liked them. I always thought they were funny. They were kind of reddish with little dots and stuff all over them.
Right.
And we used to kind of collect them while we were up there up at the trailer that we owned, and we put them in water to make sure they would survive. And when we go home, we put them back into the wild so they survived. But I'm just kind of fascinated by them. You know, they're just something different from anything else, I think, on the planet.
They are, you know, and they've always intrigued me a little bit. You know, when I was trying to figure out what kind of superhero I wanted to write about, I thought about what superheroes were successful and what made them successful. And one of the things I thought about was, you know, some of the more popular superheroes are based on yucky things, like bats, for instance. We all know about that, and spiders. And I said, well, what kind of, you know, yucky that we haven't really talked about yet? What's kind of slimy? And I thought, salamanders. You know, there's a weird idea, but the more I thought about it, the more it kind of made sense. there are salamander powers, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of liked it that he, you know, the salamander wasn't going to go out and be super strong or fly or do any of the obvious things. His powers were going to be quirky and different. For instance, a number of salamanders can see into the ultraviolet range of the spectrum, right? Which is something I didn't know until I started doing my research. But that's something that stands him in good stead at different points in the book. Mm-hmm. So it's a different kind of superhero, and he's not the kind that goes out and patrols, and he's not the kind who revels in his powers. You know, one of the influences that that I had when I was writing this was Fantastic Four number one. In that issue, I remember distinctly, it was impressive to me that when the Fantastic Four land on Earth, they've just gone through the cosmic rays, and they've started to change, and they land on Earth, and Johnny Storm bursts into flame. And he's not going, wow, cool. He's horrified, as anybody would be if they burst into flame. And at first, and then, you know, and then his sister turns invisible. What a horrifying thing. Because when it happened, she didn't know if she'd ever turn visible again. Here she is, essentially cut off from mankind. She can't be seen. It's a terrible idea, terrible feeling. And then, of course, what's worse than becoming a pile of orange rocks, you know? So it was, they were horrified, and they couldn't believe this was happening, and nobody was thrilled about it, and nobody was reveling in it. Even Reed Richards, who, you know, was down to earth as he could be, was turning into something he didn't understand and wasn't prepared for. Well, I wanted to get that feeling into I Am the Salamander. And when readers check out the Kickstarter site, they'll see the expression on the face of my protagonist, Tim Cruise. And he's horrified. He didn't ask for this. He's changing in a way that scares him, and he does what he has to do, but he's really pretty terrified by not only what's happened but what might happen, especially in the fact that, you know, in lieu of the fact that he had cancer, and he's scared of what's happening to his body now.
Well, you're way too creative to do, like, have him have a salamander signal or to, you know, and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, that's right, a salamander.
You're never going to do that.
That would be funny.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of standard stuff, or have him bit by a radioactive salamander or something like that.
Right. Well, you know, it actually occurred to me, but I said, nah, that would be too crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of play a little bit with the tropes of superhero books, particularly since he's a teenager, and, you know, the girlfriend, the bully, all that stuff. I kind of play with that idea and you know, hopefully get some ironic moments out of it. This is a kid who just can't handle what's happening to him, and he's struggling with it. And I should add, you know, what I'd like to do, you know, if the book does well, is I'd like to continue his adventures, and also I think I'd like to create a little superhero universe in prose. Okay. Just with a few characters, and have them be the protagonists of their individual books, but also interact to some extent and guest star in each other's books. I think that would be pretty cool. Now, you know, I don't think Stan Lee has anything to worry about, but But I don't, you know, Wild Cards kind of did that a while ago, and that was very well done, but it wasn't really a situation where each character had his own novel.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a short form mm-hmm. interaction there. So that's the kind of thing I hope to do, and I have a couple of other characters in mind that I'm toying with and may incorporate in some way into the rewards that I'm offering for my Kickstarter.
Because there are so many heroes that are out there, and everybody says, oh, every last thing's been done. But I don't believe that. I think there are plenty of other things to do. And this sounds very much like a move in a direction that we haven't seen before, so I like that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot to be done as well. You know, you could say that every costumed hero is a variation of Superman or Batman if you really want to dig deep, or, you know, or if you want to go back even further, you know, to Doc Savage and the Shadow and John Carter of Mars. But really there are new formulas and new approaches out there. And I think the Salamander, is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the freedom, of course, to do it the way I really want to do it. There's no, editor telling me, and believe me, I love editors, but there's no editor telling me, nah, you don't want to really do it this way. Because if there was, they would probably say, I don't know about this whole idea of making him a cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is that going to sell? That's a big chance you're taking, and I'm not sure we want to take that chance with you.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I'm publishing it on my own through the auspices of Kickstarter gives me a big advantage in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our Crazy Eight Press imprint, the imprint that I share with some other writers who've done books and comics, that gives us that same kind of freedom, you know, to do what we want to do without having to answer to not only editors and publishers, but book chains and bookstore buyers and the forces that tend to in a lot of cases homogenize the superhero concepts and kind of mitigate what might other be some very, very cool concepts into something that's more palatable by the general public.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes what I really do is I go through, you know, the what we call the phone book, the previews that comes out, and I start reading the concept. And I have to say that a lot of the most creative stuff is not made by the big two, DC and Marvel. It's just all kind of wonderful stuff out there. And, man, I am so grateful when I find something great because,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a lot of it out there. And unfortunately, if you're not Superman, Batman, or the X-Men or something, you're not going to get quite the attention you've got. But what you have to do is slowly build it up. And I could see if you've got your own sort of Friedman verse that you're going to create with the heroes, that you can do this slowly and build on and build on and build on. And eventually, one thing I would recommend, and this is a great comic staple, is to have them all team up in a team novel or something.
Right, right.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun.
I was thinking about that, and one of the technical challenges there is, you know, I'm the Salamander is being written in the first person, and I kind of feel like the others should be as well. So I might, you know, I have a little challenge there. If you have a team book, you could tell it from one member's point of view. You could tell it from alternating first person points of view. But, you know, there are some challenges there in prose. In a comic, you don't have to worry about that too much. The picture tells the story if that's the way you want to do it, and you don't have to worry as much about point of view. But I would definitely like to take them and you know, give them a kind of team challenge and have them attack it together. And of course, you know, they're not team guys. You know, they'll be operating on their own for you know, certainly at first. and perhaps just acknowledging little bits and pieces of the continuities of the other heroes. But I think this integrated, you called it Friedmanverse. That's very, yeah. I love that. But this integrated little universe, I think, down the road will be a very cool thing for readers. And I agree with you. I think right now, and and I've had great experiences with DC and also with Marvel, and I wish them nothing but the best. But I have to agree, the really cool stuff is coming out from independents and smaller publishers and those that can take chances without having to answer to a corporate hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I might just throw another idea at you. You could have your team book from the perspective of somebody we haven't met before who sees them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Another idea.
That's true.
That's free too, by the way. I don't
know. No, you're right. That's a good way to handle it.
Now, this is called a young adult book.
Mm-hmm.
Is the format of this going to be different from, like, say, the other Crazy 8 Press offerings?
Not appreciably. I mean, it's a young adult book primarily because it's a teenage protagonist. That's the main demand that's placed on the author when he's addressing the young adult market is the hero has to be a teenager with teenage issues and teenage problems. But Spider-Man is a young adult story.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was very much a teenager, not even an old teenager in the early Spider-Man and the early Ditko issues, and that's another inspiration for me as I as I deal with the Salamander. If you look at the early Spider-Man, you'd be hard pressed to find any muscle at all on that kid's body.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
He's a stripling. He's a skinny teenager, and Ditko, really brought him to life and made him dynamic. But as long as Ditko was doing him, he didn't have a whole lot of muscle. Mm-hmm. And I think let's face it, most of us are not built like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And even these days, probably even Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't built like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think it's so much more natural and so much more realistic for the Salamander to be a slender kid who's just trying to cope with these powers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to ask you, of course, where did the inspiration come for this story? Was it an event in your life, or somebody that you met, or how did that happen?
Well, I can't say it's one particular event. Every character I write, and probably every character every author writes, is a piece of that author, and has something to do with the author's experience. Even the villains, have something to because the villains see life through the set of eyes that the author has, and so I'm sure that everything that's happening to Tim Cruise is something that's reminiscent of something that's happened to me. I wanted to talk about alienation and the changes that teenagers go through in trying to understand the world and find their place in it, and that's something I've gone through, and as far as I know, everybody else has gone through. So that was sort of what made me want to do this. Is to write for teenagers and give them a little hand as they go through life, probably not turning into salamanders, but nonetheless, meeting a host of challenges, and I think Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, I think these were major influences as I worked on the Salamander. Because they have these great origin stories.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Marvel characters do, and mm-hmm. more so, I think, than the DC characters. I think Superman and Batman certainly do, but you've got to dig a lot deeper to find a compelling origin story for Green Lantern. And I know you like Green Lantern and the Flash and Wonder Woman. I think if you dig deep enough, you can find it, but it's not as obvious as, you know, Tony Stark being an arms dealer, essentially, who's wounded by his own weapons and finds himself with shrapnel lodged against his heart. You know, that's a compelling origin story. Barry Allen being doused in chemicals and lightning at the same time is less so.
Well, what's interesting is the DC put out recently a video of the Flashpoint event that they did. And the great thing about that I love so much was that, you know, Barry Allen loses his powers. He wants to get them back, so he tries to recreate the thing, and he almost kills himself in the process. The first time, he's just like raw skin all over when the lightning strikes. And I thought that was a nice, actually a realistic look at how this should go.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
I mean, hit by lightning?
Yeah.
That's not the kind of thing you usually survive, much less
that's right.
Turn into a superhero.
That's right.
And, you know, one thing I want to, you know, make clear is I am the Salamander. It's not about cancer. It's not about how he deals with cancer on every page. It's subtext, and for the most part, it's always in the background, but he's not fighting cancer. He's not fighting giant cancer cells or anything like that. He's just someone who's personality has been shaped by that experience. You know, sort of the way Tony Stark's been shaped by the shrapnel in his chest, sort of the way the Hulk has been, Bruce Banner has been shaped by this endocrine disorder that's been spurred by the super soldier formula. It's something that's in the background always, but it's not, you know, Tony Stark doesn't go around fighting giant pieces of shrapnel.
Yeah. Well, I also think that teen heroes are something that teenagers can relate to because it's like a coming of age thing.
It is. And this story is very much a coming of age story. And really, when you look at a lot of the media successes these days, you know, you look at Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker, there's a whole list in comics and outside comics of teenaged heroes trying to find themselves, trying to figure out what's their place in life and what are they supposed to be doing when these horrific conditions take hold. So yeah, it's definitely a coming of age story, and it's something that'll be resolved somewhat in this first book, but you know, we will have more growth in books to come. And now that I'm thinking about it, even the latest incarnation of James T. Kirk, he's essentially a teenager. He's for all intents and purposes. And one of the mistakes, in my opinion, one of the mistakes they made in Into Darkness was that he didn't continue to grow. From the point where we left him at the end of the first movie, he sort of regressed and followed the same arc a second time. That's, you know, my take in any case.
Well, you know, I've gotten so many Kirk fans angry at me when I tell them this is the first Kirk I actually understand and relate to. I don't. The other James Kirk with Mr. Shatner, I recognize he's a household name, and I recognize he does very well. But the trick to me is that I, you know, here comes this cocky guy, and he's basically, you know, he gets all the alien babes, and he does all, every time, he's even an engineer when he needs to be and stuff like that. And I was kind of looking at him going like, who is this crazy guy? You know, and so for me, when I actually thought that this, not, I'm not a real fan of the movies. I they're basically retellings of the old Trek, but I really liked the new Kirk in that sense, because I actually saw some character growth, mm-hmm. which I'd never seen in Kirk before. He's always been the same as he was, you know. And so for me, it was just like, I was like, wow, I said, I actually understand Kirk now. Well, I've always been a Spock fan for a long time.
You say you have been?
Yeah.
A Spock fan. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Spock, boy. Now, there's an original character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very different. Well, why don't we go ahead and let people know how they can contribute to the Salamander series?
Sure. The book's up on Kickstarter.com, and probably the best way to do that is to go to Kickstarter. I'm going to do that as I'm speaking to you, so I know exactly what I'm doing here. So you go to Kickstarter. You can Google it. And then there's a little oval space that says search projects, and you would just type in "I am the Salamander," and I'm going to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. It mm-hmm. pops up, and you just click on that, and it'll give you everything you need to know, including the rewards. And mm-hmm. I should talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For $6, you can get an ebook
mm-hmm.
version of the Salamander. For $25, you can get the ebook as well as a physical copy of the book and trade paperback version, mm-hmm. and also a thank you letter from me. You know, mm-hmm. send a personalized letter to all my backers, which will actually be my pleasure. And then, for more generous donations, you can get, on the literary side, you can be acknowledged mm-hmm. in the acknowledgments, or you can have a character named after you. And actually, I'm thinking about adding a category where you have something like a street or a business or something like that named after you, which I think would be fun for the donors. Mm-hmm. And on the art side, the cover is done by a brilliant up-and-coming artist from Brazil. His name is Caio Cacau, C-A-C-A-U. And this is a guy I think we'll be hearing a lot about as time goes on, because his art is just spectacular. I mean, in this case, he did a painted cover. But he also does great comic character work in panel form, and he's a brilliant up and coming artist. And among the rewards are limited edition sketches of the character, the Salamander, limited edition color prints of the cover signed by Akayo, and convention style sketches of the character, also signed by him. And for a very generous donation, you can actually say, "Hey, Caio, I like the cover, but I'd like to see a different scene painted. I'd like to see a different scene depicted. And here's what I'd like to see." And he will create a cover according to your personal specs.
Wow.
And of course, he'll sign that as well. And you'll be the only one who owns that particular image. So
wow.
I think that's a cool thing. I don't know where else you'd get a terrific artist to create a cover just for you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So there are a lot of fun rewards. And of course, we're just leaking out the stretch rewards. You know, if we exceed our goal, there'll be some other rewards that I'll talk about soon, and they'll have to do with perhaps some of my other books and maybe some cool items that relate to the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your goal for this?
The goal is $5,000. And we have to reach it by Saturday the 16th at 7:06 Eastern Standard Time. So I'm sure I'll be, well, maybe not, maybe I'll be lucky, but I'm sure I'll be, you know, biting my fingernails until then. It's a very exciting but also nerve-wracking experience going through this Kickstarter thing. And of course, if I, you know, I have to meet that goal by November 16th, or the whole project kind of falls apart. So we're really hoping to meet that goal. And and the reason that that I picked that number is because, as in all Kickstarter campaigns, about 10% comes off the top for Kickstarter and for Amazon Payments, which processes the donations. And then with the remaining $4,500, I pay for the cover, the cover design, which is, you know, the elements that go in addition to the art, the interior design, because the pages have to be designed not only for print, but also for the various ebook formats. So that's probably about, including print, about five formats in all, and that gets a little expensive. And then the balance will be to finance the printing of of a supply of books, which I can then go out and sell, or in some cases perhaps donate to appropriate places, given the subject matter of what we're talking about. So it's very exciting, and it's very cool, and I'm getting to meet some readers that I haven't met before through Kickstarter and through other authors who are helping me promote this, and so it's a cool, very cool experience. But it's nerve wracking because I've got to make my goal by November 16th.
Well, we'll get the word out, because it really sounds like an engaging book to me, and I don't think it's just young adults are going to enjoy it. It sounds to me like comics readers could enjoy it, and also other adults can understand that situation, and I think they get a lot out of the book, sounds like to me.
Well, yeah, thank you. I agree. I mean, even though it's a young adult book in the sense that it's a teenaged hero, one thing I never like to do, even in middle grade books, or even in books that I've done for Scholastic for beginning readers, I never want to talk down to the reader. I always want to bring them up to an adult level in some respect. And you know, that's just, I just think that's good writing. So I would, you know, I'm writing this for me, and I'm hardly a teenager anymore. So I'm writing this for me. This is the kind of book I would enjoy. And the only thing that makes it specifically young adult is the protagonist, the age of the protagonist. Yeah. It's an interesting and exciting challenge.
You know, after Harry Potter's success, I find more and more teenagers are actually reading books. And as a comic reader myself, I like to read novels occasionally. So variety is a big thing for me, and this sounds like something I'll have to make sure I get into my schedule so I can read it and see what happens. The one thing I want to know particularly is, what are his powers? How, you know, what has he got to do with this? So don't spoil that for me. I want to know that when I read the book.
well, we did talk about the ultraviolet, you know, being able to see into the ultraviolet range. That's something that's different from a lot of other characters, and as you say, you'll have to read the book to see the others. But they're interesting. It's an interesting, quirky set of powers.
And for no other reason, we get to find out what a salamander hero would be like.
That's right.
That's worth the price of reading it. You do a great job with characters and making them realistic and understandable. And so I think that's going to be one of the strengths of the book, is to make sure that we get a chance to meet these people and to see how they're involved in their worlds and how this all comes together. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, while I've got you here, there's a couple other questions, since you have a background in comics. But, you know, now that you're a writer, we get to call you an author. You don't call comics writers authors.
Right. No, that's true.
so we get to call you an author. But let's return to your comics days, and let's talk about two subjects in particular I want to talk with. What's really popular today, and DC's doing it, Marvel's doing it, really everybody's doing it, but the reboot and relaunch of characters. What's your take on that, since it seems to be so popular today?
I really don't like it. Mm-hmm. I think if you have a popular character, let's say a Superman, I don't see why you would tamper with it. What you're doing is trying to cater to your existing readers and giving them something different. It's kind of a stunt. But I really think that readers want to believe in the reality of these characters at some level. Mm-hmm. And if you're constantly rebooting, I say constantly, but you know, if you're rebooting at all, then you're poking a hole in this. You're pulling the curtain aside and saying, yeah, you see, it's not really real. Because if it was, we wouldn't keep changing it. Mm-hmm. And I think maintaining that seamless reality is very important. And by rebooting, I think they're losing that, particularly when the reboot is radical surgery. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were just going back to number one and reintroducing the character and treading in the same steps, that would be a little different. Okay, so they're retelling the story pretty much the way they retold the Batman story in the animated version. Mm-hmm. That would be different. But because they're changing everything around, you know, if they're changing it, then how is it any better than a brand new character from a different publisher? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're severing your ties to that legacy, mm-hmm. that your readers have gotten used to and have come to believe in, mm-hmm. what are you gaining? I don't see it.
Yeah, the thing I always worry about is that there's no such thing as bad characters, but there are bad writers who work on characters. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what they often will do is mangle a character all the way around so they can tell stories they want to tell,
right,
instead of being true to the character. And that's the thing that drives me crazy when I see that.
Right.
You know, like right now, for example, in Spider-Man, you've got Dr. Octopus living in Peter Parker's body. And that creeps me out. I'm sorry. He goes up to Mary Jane and he starts making the hit on her, and I am just sitting there going, oh, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and what they've basically done is they've completely rejiggered the whole Peter Parker character. And I think Peter Parker is a classic character.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you know, and of course, even in the Ultimate Universe, they put a half black, half Hispanic guy by the name of Miles Morales in. And I'm kind of like, what in the world? I mean, you know, I worry about that stuff because somebody, let's say when they're going to do The Amazing Spider-Man 2 comes out, and if Dr. Octopus is still living in Peter Parker's body, the people who buy the comic because they went to the movie are going to go, what?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
That's right.
So I don't like that kind of stuff. When you have to fracture a character, and it's also true in comics, like Dick Grayson was Batman for a while, and from the moment it happened, I said, you know what? Why don't we just start a pool to say who's going to get it right when he gets back to being Nightwing,
yeah,
and Bruce Wayne's back to being Batman? And it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Those kind of things bother me.
It's sort of like when they made Hal Jordan the Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
You know, the Spectre was the Spectre for a reason. You know, he mm-hmm. Corrigan was the Spectre because of what happened to him. He became the mm-hmm. Spirit of Justice. Mm-hmm. How Hal Jordan could be the Spectre, it just didn't fit, and it was change. I think a lot of this falls into the category of change for change's sake.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't grow organically. We're just going to change it and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't like that. Whenever that happens, it always feels like it's stuffed into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it and I go, boy, I don't understand why they're doing this. I never get it. But I think you're right on some of that. But, you know, there are some times when a reboot actually works for me, but it depends. I like, for example, I think The Flash has been revitalized. it's one of those hidden gems that's going on in DC's New 52. I feel like I'm the only one promoting that book, but I really enjoy what they're doing with it because it's great. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you one other thing, too, before I let you go. Now, you're dealing with digital versions of your print books. Mm-hmm. What do you think about digital comics?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, you know, it makes comics accessible to a lot more people. You know, I grew up in an era when comics were valuable in two ways. You could read them and enjoy the stories and the artwork, but you could also collect them. Mm-hmm. And I think with digital comics, you're kind of missing out on that, on part of that experience. The collecting experience, when I go into my collection and I see a book that I bought 30, 40, I'm going to stop right there, but it goes on, you know, that many years ago, I don't just look at it. I feel it. I smell it. You know, that book has a physical reality, and that's not something that you get from digital comics. Mm-hmm. But you do get the opportunity to see comics that from more independence, for one thing, because you know, so you get more variety from creators that might not be able to create if they had to face the expense of paper and printing and distribution. Mm-hmm. So I think there, you know, I think it's not only is it a inevitable thing, mm-hmm. but I think it's a good thing. And if it keeps comics alive, mm-hmm. then I'm for it.
Okay. Because two things I want to bring up, you got out of my head, by the way, when you were saying that, was that Frank Miller always told the story when he went into a drugstore, and of course this was back to how long ago it was, the drugstores were selling comics and racks and stuff. Mm-hmm. He picked up a Batman book and he started to read it, and he said he fell in. Mm-hmm. And I love that description, because that's the way it was with me. I was reading, my first thing I ever read was a Batman comic, and he was at a castle, and he was making these wings, and he was like gliding around the castle, and I was like, whoa! Mm-hmm. And from then I was hooked, and so that's the kind of experience that I think comics should do.
Right.
With that. And I showed my iPad to a couple people over the weekend, and I had some digital comics on there, and I showed these to these computer experts who know a lot more how computer works than I do. And they were amazed at the color on the screen. You know, the iPad screen is a lot sharper and has a lot more variation of the color.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was like amazed at how the color looked.
Yeah.
And that was just drawing him in as to see how that is. And I think, you know, if you're used to video games, as a lot of kids are that are coming along today, it might be that digital comics will actually get them starting reading.
Right, right. And that's been, I don't have to tell you, that's been a huge problem, is engaging kids, because comics did abandon that part of the market when they went to direct sales and proliferation of number ones and platinum covers and so on. They abandoned that part of the market that couldn't afford to buy comics at those prices and couldn't go into comic stores without, you know, getting somebody to take them. So if it repatriates that part of the market, then yeah, that'll be a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see, because I agree with you that digital is going to be the only way to get comics before too very long. Mm-hmm. When that's going to happen, I'm not sure. I would hate to see the comic shops go out of business, but
yeah.
You know, you can like, for example, if I can't get to the store one day, I can download them and I don't have to pay taxes on them
right. Through
my iPad. And so this is it just makes it all the more accessible. So
yeah, and they should really be cheaper, mm-hmm. you know, than they are. Major publishers in all, you know, books, comics, you know, they really charge quite a bit for it, considering how little it costs them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I remember my friend Bob Rozakis, when he worked at DC, one of the things he used to do was buy paper. You know, it was just, that was a big job, getting the best price on paper. And now, if that's not an issue, then comics, digital comics, should cost less.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. But you brought up something else I got to ask you real quick. Have you set a price for what the I Am the Salamander is going to cost, like over the counter?
I'm not sure exactly. I guess it'll be, you mean when we finally sell it, when the Kickstarter is over and, and we finally sell it, I think it'll be in the neighborhood of $18 maybe for the, paperback. But of course the digital version, the ebook will be a lot less because why not? We don't have all those costs. But that, I don't think we'll be putting it on sale. The edition that's available through the Kickstarter is a limited edition. I don't think we'll be doing the mass edition, making that available until probably around April.
Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and one more time tell us how we can get involved in this?
Well, you go to Kickstarter.com. And you type in I Am the Salamander in the little search for projects space, and it brings up a thumbnail, I guess, of the I Am the Salamander cover, and you click on that, and you go right to the project, look down the right-hand side of the page at the various rewards and see which ones appeal to you and which ones you can afford, and then make a contribution at that level, and sit back and wait for the goodies to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, we should also talk about crazy8press.com. That's crazy with the number 8.
It's actually, it could be either way.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay.
Glenn Howman, our tech wizard, was smart enough to do it either way. So, but the way you usually see it is crazy8press with the numeral 8. So if you go to crazy8press.com, you can see the books that that I've done in the last couple of years since we started the imprint, and also the books that Peter David and Russ Colchimiro and Aaron Rosenberg and Paul Kupperberg and Glenn Howman and our friend Bob Greenberger have done for Crazy 8 in the last 2 years. We've done stuff that we're proud of and stuff that that very likely wouldn't have been published by a traditional publisher because again you have a superhero who survived cancer. Regular publisher might not touch that. Peter has a series called Pulling Up Stakes about a vampire hunter, but it's a guy. And traditional publishers said to him, yeah, no, it can't be a guy. It can't be a guy. It's got to be a girl. The girl's got to be the vampire hunter. That's how it works. And by the way, this is funny. We can't have funny. Funny doesn't work there. So Peter said, yeah, but that's, first of all, that's what I want to do. And second of all, I know my readers, and I think they'd like this. And sure enough, the readers have responded. So we've been able to do things that are at Crazy 8 Press that are not down the middle of the road. If a reader's looking for the traditional tried and true science fiction and fantasy plots, then there's nothing wrong with going to a traditional publisher. But if he or she is more discerning and is looking for something different and quirky and not down the middle of the road, then Crazy 8 Press is really the place to be.
Well, maybe some of us can get together and put some donations in and take a little of the suspense out of what you're going through with Kickstarter right now, and maybe we can get it done a little early. That would be nice to do, and I include myself in that.
That would be terrific. I really appreciate that because I don't need the suspense.
You don't want the drama.
No. No drama.
Well, Michael, I wish you a lot of success, and I hope this gets on there, and who knows, maybe TV or movies are in the future of this character. You never know.
Well, I appreciate that, and as they say, from your mouth to God's ears.
Okay. Well, it's good talking with you as always, Michael.
Yeah, same here. I always enjoy it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News. interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. Okay, let's get to some news, and a little of it's still going to dribble out of New York Comic Con, but I didn't know it, so maybe you didn't either. First up, I want to talk about that news, and that is the story that Superboy, which is now going to be written by Marv Wolfman, is not going to star Kal-El any longer. It's going to have John Kent, who is also called John Lane Kent, the son of Lois Lane and Superman from a future timeline. He's going to be a little less squeaky clean, as we can find out. And it's going to be interesting to see how he does with that character. I like Kal-El. Marv Wolfman says he has a little trouble with the character because he's been written by 100 people so far, and there is a lot of history involved. And of course, New 52 cleaned out a lot of that, but he still kind of looks at it as a whole. And the interesting thing is that the Kal-El stories have been about him learning who and what he is and adjusting to his new life. The John Lane Kent stories are about a man who has grown up to hate those with superpowers and was taught to stop them at all cost. Immediately, this means that this is going to require a very different approach to plotting and story. And I'm looking forward to that. I think that's not a bad thing. Marv Wolfman is a good writer, but we discovered in the New Teen Titans just how influential George Perez can be, even as a writer, because he would tidy things up for him. So what's going to happen is upcoming soon, and that's going to be in issue number 26. We'll see Marv Wolfman writing and Andres Guinaldo, and I'm sure I fractured that, on Superboy. So we'll be looking forward to that. Another bit of DC news I think is important to share is that Aquaman is going to get his own annual for the first time in the New 52. Aquaman's been doing pretty well since Mr. Geoff Johns took him over. And this is going to happen in time for Jeff Parker to take over the series coming in December. It's going to be written by John Ostrander, who's written a fill-in issue in the past. And it's described this way. Aquaman must reunite with the others to investigate whether or not their recently deceased member Vostok has returned from the dead. If he has, he is definitely not the same Vostok that they remember. Art's going to be by Geraldo Borges and Rui Jose. The cover will be by Paul Pelletier, of course, the regular penciler on Aquaman. It's going to be coming out on October 30 this week, so I'll look forward to that. Also, because I'm a big old Batman fan, I'm going to end with this story. Batman Arkham Origins is getting a lot of positive fan press and also a lot of positive reviews. What fascinates me most about the story is that this is back in Batman's beginning, and we're also seeing in the comics some of that, too. Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo have been delving into that, and so once again, we're going to see more about this. And Origins is expected to come out sometime before the end of the year. It lets players become the Batman in a very different way than the rest of the critically acclaimed series has. The player has to learn how to be Batman while he's learning himself. The approach changes the implementation of tried and true gameplay while delivering a story that, we're told, surprisingly feels more like the comics than the rest of the series. That's a strong endorsement as far as I can say. So I might have to go out there and get me some Batman Arkham Origins. And that's the news for this week. And let's see what's coming out this Wednesday on October the 30th. Again, I remind you that if you want a complete list, you go to MajorSpoilers.com on Monday, and you'll find all the books there. I just kind of highlight the ones that I prefer. We'll find the previews number 302 for November coming out this week, because it's the end of the month. And then we'll also find Captain Midnight number 4, which I truly love. What a great book that is by Joshua Williamson. I hope you're reading it, because there's only 4 issues in, so if you need to catch up, you can go digital or go to your local store. From DC Comics, we get annuals as well as some regular books. We get Action Comics Annual Number 2, the previously mentioned Aquaman Annual Number 1, Batman Hardcover Volume 3, Death of the Family, which was a great story, by the way, and Damian, Son of the Batman, in which he has not died, but he's actually kind of in the future. I think it's an alternate universe one. There's also the DC Comics 1 Million Omnibus Hardcover for $99.99. Let's throw in that penny and get the whole $100 in there. There's also Forever Evil, Argus Number 1, Green Lantern Annual Number 2, Nightwing Annual Annual number 1, Smallville Season 11 Special number 3, Superman Adventures The Man of Steel for about $10, also Superman The Man of Steel Believe for $10, Swamp Thing Annual $4.99, and Teen Titans Annual number 2. So there's a lot of stuff coming out. This is the fifth week of the month, so DC is following through on their promise to make sure good things come out even on that week. If you want to buy collectibles, there is the Orange Lantern for almost $200, just not 5 cents off that. And there's also an action figure pack with Injustice Catwoman versus Doomsday. We move into IDW, and we get Powerpuff Girls number 2. I like that. In conjunction with Samurai Jack, which recently came out, is Classics Volume 1 for $19.99. I think you're going to enjoy that if you like the show. Those were all printed, I think, by DC. Then we get to Image, and we find Saga number 15, which a lot of people really enjoy. Then in Marvel Comics, we get Infinity number 5. I hope other people are reading it. I kind of got bored after the first one, but a lot of good Marvel people out there keep buying it. And there's also Kick-Ass 3 number 4, soon to be a major motion picture. Then we get Thor Crown of Fools, which I'm sure is tying into the upcoming Thor film. Only about a month away for that. And X-Men Battle of the Atom number 2. In other comic companies, we get Bionic Man number 25 from Dynamite. The Fox number 1, which I'm really interested in. That's $2.99. This is done by Archie Comics. It's written by Mark Wade, which always gets my attention. So this, of course, is one of those heroes of the 60s or earlier that is getting a reboot. And I had a chance to look at a preview copy of it, and it's really good. I like it a lot. So I hope you'll be picking that up. I know I will. And of course, there's Game of Thrones number 17, based on the book, not the TV show. There's a Hero Bear and the Kid 2013 annual number 1. I thought they only made 2 issues of that, and he's already got an annual, so he must be doing well. There's a third printing of a book that makes me smile every time I think of the title, Mockingdead number 1, Zombie Laughter. That's $3.99, so if you're interested in that, if you kind of had your fill of serious, dark stuff, you might find that book interesting. There's also Shadow Year 1, number 6, and Exo Manowar Deluxe Hardcover Volume 1 for $40. Wow, that should be something special. And those are the books coming out this Wednesday, October 30. And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.
This is Justice.
No, I am Justice.
Batman!
You boys might want to find another career. Say hi to Gotham PD for me. Have a nice night.